From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 253 with guest Stephen Rose, recorded Tuesday, February 21st, 2012. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and you're listening to Run As Radio. Got a very special show today I'm super excited about because I've got Stephen Rose on the line, and I guess you don't really need an introduction anymore. Still a senior community manager?
Yeah, I own all the Springboard and IT Pro stuff for Windows all up, so not changed. I moved offices. That's about the extent of it.
And before you switched over to the dark side, you were an MVP and MCT and all those other good things, but now you're on the inside, and we're better for it, too.
I appreciate that.
I like your take on the company you work for and the products you're working on.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
It makes my life easier, without a doubt. So what are we talking about today, Stephen?
Well, we actually have something new to talk about because, you know, we've talked about Windows 7 and Windows 7 deployment.
Yep.
We've talked about the XP end of support that's coming in 2014 and what that means to IT pros. But now we have a new product out there. We have the Windows 8 Consumer Preview for IT pros to test and play with and devour and enjoy.
So the Consumer Preview, the first release was the Dev Preview back at Build in September. You guys went quite quiet after that, I have to admit.
Well, Stephen did a lot of blogs. Stephen Sanofsky did a lot really explaining what our thoughts were and what we were doing behind it. And then we had CES.
Right.
And at CES, we showed a version that's much closer to the beta that has just been announced, with a lot more feature functionality. And that really brought us to the consumer preview that we're at now. So we've actually shown more than we did in that Windows 7 developer preview to Windows 7 beta timeframe, if you really take a look at the stuff that we put out.
And I love the CES keynote, because I didn't feel like Win 8 was the focus of CES. I think Xbox sort of stole the show. Phone really got some great airtime. But if you knew something about Win 8, if you'd been to Build and you watched the demo that you did at CES, there was a bunch of little differences and you didn't really call them out. But if you knew, you said, hey, did you just do that? Did you just split the screen between desktop mode and metro mode at the same time?
Yep. And I think that's been kind of a really critical thing for us is, you know, we don't want to put this product out before it's ready to get out there, before it's ready for, you know, IT pros to start to play with. And CES, we had a lot of new feature functionality, which IT pros can now play with. And but it really was, and it has been, is we don't want IT pros to just stop doing what they're doing on 7 and go, ooh, Windows 8. We want them to go, I've got to get off XP. I'm working towards 7, but feel with great confidence that the work that they're doing for 7 is going to allow them, if they want to move to 8 when we do RTM, which is still a ways away,
sure,
to be able to do it at that point in time.
Now, you call it a consumer preview. Are you really wanting regular consumers to take this thing out and take it for a spin?
Absolutely. I mean, what's great about, you know, the Windows 8 consumer preview is it is not only a good touch experience, it's a great keyboard and mouse experience. And that's something that's very different from the developer preview.
It was very challenging to use the developer preview without touch.
Absolutely. But that's because it was built very much like we've done, like the Win 8, like, you know, like the IE previews.
Yeah.
Here's a framework to build some apps to understand how this is going to work, but it wasn't finished. It really was just for developing. Now we have one where IT pros and consumers can load this up, get stability, load in their Windows 7 applications, have them work beautifully, start to play with some of the Metro apps that we have, leverage some of the new Windows Live feature functionality that we have, and really give this thing a spin and see for themselves, you know, how this is going to work and be able to really really leverage and see that experience.
I mean, I'm thinking from my perspective as an IT pro, if regular mortals are going to install this, they've got my number, so I better be up to speed on it just to provide them with tech support.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I guess the big thing is just making sure all my apps work in Win 8.
Yeah, and they will, and that's what's great is you're going to have your Metro-style apps, but you're going to be able to install, you know, Office 2010 right on this. It'll put an icon right on the desktop, and now with the consumer preview, you're able to organize those applications into sort of folders and buckets. Again, really think of the Metro screen as your start menu.
Mm-hmm.
This is where you're going to load up saying, here's my apps I use at home. Here's the ones I use at work, et cetera, and organize those from the Metro and non-Metro style, but still be able to launch all of those from the screen.
Well, and also all of your favorites, although we keep getting told by Hamachevich that nobody uses favorites except us. But, you know, all your browser favorites end up as icons in that same Metro area.
Well, again, you'll be able to do it that way, or when you launch a new screen, you'll be able to see your favorites there. And again, it is one version of IE10. There is the version on the desktop, which is the IE10 for desktop, and you have the IE10, which is there on the Metro style, and the IE10 on the desktop will still support all your regular favorites. But if there's 10, 15 sites that you tend to go to more than others,
yeah,
great to be able to pin those on your Metro style homepage. And then when you use the desktop browser, if that's what you spend a lot of your time in, to have your more extended ones there. So you'll be able to organize that.
Yeah, you can do it either way. And I think about the stuff you end up sticking in that home toolbar right under the address bar in IE9, that would end up in the Metro screen.
Absolutely. And you'll still be able to do that. You'll be able to right-click and be able to see those and do that too.
Is it too early to start talking about changes to things like group policy and the sort of security models that around Win8?
Well, it's not too early, but I think, you know, if we're talking about what are some of the key IT pro features that mm-hmm. they want to take a look at, there are a lot. I mean, security being, you know, some of the biggest areas. Windows to Go, obviously, one of the biggest features, which is something that's not available in the consumer preview, but we've talked about a lot. We've shown a lot of videos at the Build conference. The fact that you can put Win8 on a USB key and boot it up to a machine that is not running Windows 8, I put it on, you know, allow a consumer to put it in as long as they can boot from USB, you're going to have a great experience there. And that's probably one of the most exciting features. But then it's the whole secure boot, measured boot, which the biggest complaint that we tend to get from a lot of people is, how do I get rid of these malware rootkits? And why can't Microsoft do something to protect me? And the secure boot using the UEFI platform basically is a pre-OS environment that actually goes through. And it replaces the standard BIOS process, which is something we've had for years.
Yeah.
And it allows it to go in, validate that process. It's signed, it's protected, and it's measured, and it's stored on a chip. And it's going to go through and look for rootkits and malware. And it's a lot easier to change the tires on a car when it's not running. And that's really what we're looking at, is pulling those out before the system boots. And that's a really exciting feature, which, you know, is going to be in that machine. And, you know, I think it's really going to start to make a difference.
And isn't UEFI really the rekindling of that whole trusted computing platform idea that I think people rejected initially because it seemed quite threatening,
mm-hmm.
even though the intent was good? It does seem like it's been better organized now just to recognize. I mean, BIOS is old. BIOS is 80s old.
Yep. I think UEFI is a big difference. And I think that now using the TPM chip, which is a backbone for us when we use direct access, you have to have a TPM enabled laptop.
Right.
And as we start to take a look at, with Windows 8, it's going to allow us to do a really comprehensive series of measurements during that boot process, which we're calling measured boot. It's going to validate the boot process. It's going to take a look at all the hardware that's in there. It's going to work nicely with the BitLocker. It's going to prevent the rootkit. It's going to do the malware. So we're really, I think, have gotten to a point where we're really able to leverage it, and where the average IT pro is going to go, hey, now TPM makes sense, and we're going to start to make sure our laptops have TPM and turn that feature on.
Right. And certainly for any device that can be stolen, this is clearly the way to go.
Absolutely.
Does it still make sense in the desktop as well?
I think it does. I think it really depends on how you're using it, how you want to set up group policies. It just now gives you another level of security to feel comfortable that if you're leveraging the cloud to store your data, if you're not using VDI or things like that, and all that data that user is using, your sales figures, really critical company data, if it's on that machine, that you have the ability to secure that, to connect to it, to manage it, to wipe it, to disable it, to do what you need to do for those machines that you know are out there but you've never seen, that's going to give you an edge. And I think that's where it's really starting to make the difference as IT pros start to take a look at the hardware choices, not just moving to 64, but 64 with the TPM chip in it.
Right. That particular combination seems to be the most robust. And it does feel like we're sort of leaving a certain amount of stuff behind. I mean, I'm thinking we're defeating rootkits here by changing the root.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, you know, when do we end up with a rootkit that's good with UEFI?
Well, I think the difference is that the actual system itself is the SOA. It's the system on a chip architecture,
right.
The SOC, which really makes a big difference because that's not something that can be rewritten or can be edited. So we're getting into an area where we've got that deep dive of security that's going to be much, much harder to penetrate. There's no such thing as a 100% secure machine,
yeah.
But the harder we make it, the better it is for us and the better it is for the end user and less that they need to worry about. And we can always update that BIOS, the manufacturers can, to help increase that security as we start to see new threats evolve in the future.
So technically it's still a BIOS, it's just that it's being accessed through this extensible framework.
It's a little bit more. It's an actual mini operating system that
right.
fits on the chip itself. Unlike BIOS, which was a very simple few lines that were sort of checking for certain things, this is more complex and can be made to do a deeper level of searching and looking. And I think it's a great opportunity for our manufacturers to build that more secure Windows desktop that users have been asking for.
Mm-hmm.
That goes beyond just antivirus and malware software on the desktop.
And into just a more robust, really checking in, am I allowed to start? Is this the right person?
Yep. You know,
that whole level of security.
Absolutely.
So where do we go from here? Should we talk a little more about new features in the consumer preview?
Yeah, why don't we talk about a few? I think the next one that I really am very excited about is the changes to BitLocker.
Mm-hmm.
And that with BitLocker, you now have an option where, yes, you can still BitLock the full drive, but you also have an option where you can just have it BitLock the data and encrypt the data.
So is this by folder?
It'll do it, actually. So if you've got now a 500-gig hard drive, but you only have 50 gigs of data, it will only encrypt the 50 gigs of data, and it will do the rest as you add data on the fly.
Interesting. I mean, one of the complaints with BitLocker is it did slow things down, but I figured SSDs would overcome that.
Not everybody's on an SSD. You still have a lot of people that are opting for the 500 gig, you know, 5400 drive.
Yeah.
And if you've got a lot of data, even if you don't, that still takes a very long period of time.
Sure.
These people have got larger drives, but not a whole lot of data on them, 40, 50, 60 gigs sometimes. So this now reduces that time to encrypt a drive to, you know, 5-10 minutes for some users.
Yeah. You know, if you've got 60 gigs worth of data, go get yourself a 128 gig SSD and live a little.
Absolutely. I have a 256 and I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
It has made a world of difference.
Yeah.
And
you'll never go back.
No.
But it makes BitLocker insignificant then. It's just, you know, you're there. You're always encrypted.
Exactly. But
yeah.
That is a great option, which does now allow us to do it one way or the other. Because one of the complaints was it takes too long to BitLock my drive. And, you know, SSD drives are still new and they're on the more pricey laptops.
Sure.
I think for people that are looking to buy a lot of those $400 or $500 price point laptops for their users, really stripped down, this is really going to make a big difference for them.
When are we going to start seeing more choices in terms of hardware in the tablet form factor? I really get a sense that the enterprise wants to try on tablets. They're just
mm-hmm.
not happy with what's out there right now.
I agree. I mean, I have two of the Samsung Series 7 Slate.
Right.
And I love them. And they're great devices. And Windows 8 Consumer Preview works really nicely on them. But they're not built for Windows 8. And we'll probably see around the RTM time period some great Windows 8 devices
mm-hmm.
that are going to have, you know, the form factor, they're going to be thin, they're going to have that great battery life that IT pros want. The great thing that they can do now is take a look at the operating system and go, you know what, if this is working this well on this type of device, I can't wait to see it on that type. And I think
sure.
one of the great things that really is going to separate us from our competition is we're going to have so many different form factors. If you want, you know, a 24-inch tablet that also sinks into a dock, great. You want a 9-inch one with tons of battery life that does this or that is part of a keyboard or not part of a keyboard, you're going to have all these different options because HP and Dell and Asus and Samsung and all of our manufacturers, we're working very closely to build great devices that support this great touch-first experience that are business-ready. And, you know, one of my favorite things I love to say to customers is, how do you secure a Windows 8, device is join it to a domain. And that's something that you cannot do with our competitors' devices.
Right.
You can't use an SCCM engine in it to secure it. You can't join it to a domain to secure it. So that's going to be one of those great things is to have the form factor that people want, but with that level of security that they need.
Sure. But that naturally brings us to the whole ARM edition, because if we're really going to get serious about tablets, it seems like the ARM chipset is a must.
We will have ARM chip devices and SKUs that will be available when we RTM. Mm-hmm. So Stephen wrote a great blog post on ARM and what to expect from ARM. And I think that that's also going to be a great option for a lot of our businesses, whether they want the power of the Intel chip, whether they want the ARM, and what sort of things they want. Because ARM is great for certain types of devices and certain types of circumstances. But for others, it's having that full i5 core or i7 core Intel chip and a lot of RAM. That's also going to make a big difference. So,
and that little Samsung Series 7 has a ton of horsepower. I would argue it was too much horsepower.
For some and not for others. I think it depends on what you're doing. I mean, when you start getting into, 100 slide PowerPoint decks or things like that, you still get that great smooth experience that you're going to want. And if people are going to start to do CAD or Visio, things like that, design, then having that level of horsepower, again, a choice that you don't have with our competitors' devices, you can pick from that very high-end, very powerful, to something that's just great for, I need to just do email and surf the web and do some more simple things. You're going to have those choices.
And so at this point, we're not going to get a chance to play with ARM yet.
Not yet.
But and that's certainly on my radar, is making sure my clients' apps are going to make it over onto the ARM stack. But it sounds like they're going to need to be built for Metro to make that happen.
Absolutely correct. Yeah, we have said that you will have to, have apps that are built for that. We will have Office ready, a version of that ready for ARM at launch. So that is going to be a big thing for a lot of our customers to be able to have that flexibility. And then you will need to compile though your apps for ARM. And that's great, is you'll be able to start with the Intel. And if you feel that ARM is the way to go, then, we'll have a lot of options from our partners and from our software manufacturers to make sure that our customers have what they need at that point in time.
Yeah, and it sounds like, for the most part, there's opportunities just to recompile with some changes to run in the new platform.
Yep, absolutely.
And I'm throwing my developer hat on there for a minute, because, over on the tablet show, that's been a big point of conversation as well.
I can imagine over on the .NET Rock side of the house, you guys have been discussing that.
We're very concerned about that.
This section of Run As Radio is sponsored by Secret Server, the password management software for IT admins. Secret Server helps you manage local admin passwords and service accounts the right way. Get your free 30-day trial for Secret Server at runasradio.com/secret-server.
Are we seeing a new version of Server 8 as well?
Absolutely. Server 8 was released the day after Windows 8. So actually that was released on March 1st. And again, by now taking Server 8 and the Windows Consumer Preview and putting those together, there's a chance to play with some really neat stuff, like our new version of Direct Access. Not a new version, it's an improved version of Direct Access, which now can leverage IPv4 instead of IPv6 with that same level of security.
Do we still have the contiguous IP requirement?
Yeah, no, we've actually changed it so that it's a little simpler. Folks said we love Direct Access, but we're not ready to start buying all this IPv6-ready hardware.
Yeah.
So now, by leveraging the new OSs, you'll be able to do that with your current infrastructure, most probably.
Yay! I mean, when I've gotten Direct Access working, it's epically good.
But
it's not a trivial thing to get working.
No, I agree. It is the one feature, though, that I've said I would, if I had to give up any feature on my laptop, Direct Access is the one that I would never give up because I love the fact you, for those of you who've never played with it, you sit down, you're checking your email at a Starbucks. I was in Prague doing it. You travel around the world as well.
Mm.
And you get a secure link that goes to an intranet or to a SharePoint site. You click it and you're in. That's it. There's no dialing up on a client, needing that secure ID and waiting. You click, you're there. You're via IPv6, you're securely connected, then when you go back to your right, then when you click on a regular browsing page and you close that resource, you're back surfing through the standard IPv4.
Well, and just getting rid of all the bloody pop-ups for VPNs.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely seamless. And that's always what we look for as IT pros is, for the end user, it says, I don't care how it works, I just want it to work. That's really at the core of it.
Yeah, it's very profound, but that's certainly not the only thing in Server 8 that people are getting excited about.
Oh, no, I think, even the stuff we started to do in R2, like the remote FX, and now with the new VDI client, the fact that you can do VDI with touch, that you can do local USB, that you can do streaming, that we've really taken the remote desktop to a whole new level, leveraging the capabilities and that we had in Windows 2008 R2 and took it to a next level with the SP1 and now with Windows 8. Pairing that with the client, we've really been able to do some very exciting stuff.
Well, and it speaks to, I think, that enterprise architecture going forward, that combination of these new generation tablets with Server8 on the back end and using the VDI client so that I can go to a really lightweight tablet and mm-hmm. do the horsepower work on the back end, but not give up touch and USB devices and those sorts of effects. I'm just waiting for the right software for that.
Oh, no, absolutely. And then, you know, one of the other great things we get when you pair Server8 with the Windows 8 Consumer Preview is the ability to manage that Windows Store, that the store will support enterprise deployments and, that an IT administrator can use a group policy to permit a Metro-style app installation as long as they're signed by that trusted provider and the machines are joined to the domain. They can also use PowerShell commandlets to manage Metro-style apps. So, which is great. And then the great thing that we have is those applications are available to users on all the machines that they use at once. So once they've downloaded that app, if they move to another machine, they'll be able to download that application again. So they're going to be able to have that consistent experience across multiple machines.
And those machines don't all have to be Win8 on the client?
They have to be Win8, and that'll be the thing is the Windows Store works with the Win8 client. So this is another feature where we can choose to publish a store, manage a store, lock down a store, advertise apps to certain groups of people, and if they move to another machine, whether they're using the Windows to go or whether they're using another Windows 8 machine, they'll be able to have that experience move with them and have availability to those same apps.
And one of the features of Server8 that made me, you know, jump up and cheer was the whole Active Directory recycle bin.
Yeah.
That I can make a mistake and take it back.
Yeah. That's one of those things that for ages we've been like, oops, I didn't mean to just do that. And I just deleted a whole branch of my tree. How do I get that back? So I think that that's a great thing.
Yeah, it's very, very fundamental. And all of the tricks and hoops we played through in the labs to try and create isolated AD so we could practice our scripts without doing serious harm. It's just so frustrating when it's so much simpler to just be able to take something back.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me ask this from a developer standpoint, what are your thoughts on the client hypervisor that you can now have multiple instances of different versions of Windows running on one machine, on a client machine at the same time? How is that changing the way that you guys are looking at development?
Well, I mean, one of the things, this is about to me, and I'm literally dual-hatting it here. As a developer, I do not want to crack open the source of that old app and try and get it to recompile on a new platform. I don't have the dev platform environment anymore. I've lost it. And I would argue that's more valuable than the source.
Okay.
Like actually having a working compilation of an application is dramatically different from having the source code. It's not the same thing. It's not even close. And most people really struggle to understand that. So it's like, yes, we have a copy of the source. Yes, we have a running version of the app, but no, we don't have a working dev environment. And I can spend weeks trying to reconstruct it and possibly not be able to. You know, maybe we've got a dependency on a library for a company that's out of business. And you know, we can't undo that. Now my IT guy says, I can save the day. We're not going to trap that customer in that old platform anymore. Because I can create a VM just for that version of the OS to make that app run. I mean, we were able to do this with the XP emulator inside of Win 7, but that's only for XP. This seems like a more flexible solution.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, with Client Hypervisor, the ability to create a 32 or 64-bit virtual machine that we can run multiple versions of Windows simultaneously, you know, it's going to give developers a robust and flexible and efficient virtualization platform. And for app developers, a great way to test, and for IT pros, a way to say, okay, here's our current, I'm going to recreate this and test this over here so this works, or how's this going to work for my Win 7 users, and be able to go back and forth between 7 and 8 on a single machine seamlessly, or even test it at the same time, side by side. I think that that's something we've heard for a long time, and I know being a previous trainer, one of the things we were dying for was to be able to have VMs as we were doing classes and training people and doing that as well, so. I think that's something a lot of the MCTs that I know have been saying, when are we going to get Client Hypervisor?
Well, and it's, you know, we just used to do this with Ghost, right? And just rebuild machines constantly. You know, you spent your whole life just imaging and re-imaging and re-imaging and re-imaging. And same we used to do with testing, too. We wrote great scripts to just run, fire up a particular image, kick it in, do a set of tests, dump that image, load the next image. It took a long time, but you could do it. This is just a much more agile way to go about that in the testing framework.
Yeah.
And if you're, you know, IT folks, if you're dealing with these kinds of problems and your team isn't using Studio Lab Manager, smack them.
Yeah.
Because Lab Manager just takes this whole thing up a step. And I guarantee you, you already own the license. You're just not using it.
Oh, absolutely. I think between the client hypervisor and the PC reset, PC refresh feature, I think that that's three features that IT pros have been saying, hey, these are going to reduce my help desk calls. These are going to give me better ways to practice stuff. And if I mess up or things get screwed up, that I can get back to where I need to get quickly and easily.
And a lot of these features were offered by certain vendors. They were always, you know, Dell had a pretty good reset mechanism. But I just like that it's now part of the OS the same way, you know, Novell used to have a pretty good network stack too, right?
Yeah.
I'm just glad it's part of the OS now. So it's a consistent experience. I don't have to buy the same hardware each time. Often I can't buy the same hardware each time.
Well, this also now replaces steady state in many ways. And one of the things that I got yelled at the most, and I had nothing to do with it, but, you know, that's just the way it works. I get on a plane and somebody's upset with their Xbox, they yell at me. I'm like,
yep.
I don't work for Xbox. I'm like, I don't care. You work for Microsoft.
You guys are all the same.
Yeah. So it's funny. I sat next to a guy that worked for the government and I was very upset with having to deal with a traffic ticket. And the guy says, I don't work for that part of the government. I'm like, look, dude, I work for Microsoft and people yell at me for all of our products. You work for the government. It's part of the government. Deal with it.
Yeah. Suck it down.
But steady state was a feature which we did not have in Windows 7, and
yeah.
We have a lot of people.
We're sad about that.
Absolutely.
Because for certain applications, steady state was incredibly good. That kiosk,
exactly.
Get me back to where I was model, it worked awesome.
Yep. And people said, I don't want to pay for deep freeze and don't want to pay for Carbonite and the third parties. I work in a school. I've never had a PC go down. It's a public kiosk. So now with the PC refresh and the PC reset features, we now have a way to get you back every time to that good PC. Or if you're recycling a PC for another user, with literally a single push to get it back to that perfect state and say, here you go, here it is, factory fresh. Or once you get that perfect PC built, to have a way to hit that button to take you back without losing your documents, but get you back to that perfect state for your PC at any time, built right into the OS.
Nice.
So I'm really happy. That was one of the things that I was very happy to see, and I think it's going to make a big difference for a lot of our customers that have stolen XP.
Yeah, we do have baggage. We have stuff in XP that we know is not going to migrate.
Mm-hmm.
And just ways to be able to bring it forward without, you know, being able to virtualize that instance and being able to bring it forward in the new machinery so that we don't have to fix the app. We just keep running it in a smaller container while we build a replacement, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the most interesting takeaway, and I spent some time in South America, which it's a very different look at IT than we look at it in North America or in Europe. And I think what was interesting was, you know, was two things around Windows XP was there are so many choices. I don't know which one to pick. I'm going to have Windows 7 and Windows 8. I have Windows Intune and I have SCCM. I have Server 2008 R2 and I have Server 8. I have, you know, IE 8, 9, and 10. They have all these choices that it's very, very difficult to decide which now are the best paths to take. And it's still the heavy lifting over the app compatibility. And I think the biggest thing for folks to realize is that if it works in 7, it works in 8. It's the same thing we said. If it works in Vista, it works in 7.
Right.
If it doesn't work in Vista, it doesn't work in 7. It won't. You know, same thing with 8. There is no magic bullet. You're still going to have to do the app compat work.
Yeah.
And you also should at the same time learn a modern deployment tool like MDT or SCCM and leverage one of those and learn how to use it, because spending 6 hours to deploy an OS, backing up everything, building images, blowing them out, moving all the data back, it's just ridiculous when we can do an in-place upgrade in a matter of minutes.
It's so 20th century.
Yeah.
I guess that's part of the challenge here is, on one hand, I'm seeing a lot of enterprises are just getting to 7 now.
Mm-hmm.
And so 8 is really barely even on the radar.
Right.
There are certain enterprises I'm finding that are keen to figure out how they're going to use tablets, because tablets are already invading. And so they're trying to figure out how to solve that. So they're very interested in 8. But it sounds
absolutely
to me, by what we've talked about today, that if you still if you haven't made the move to 7, you've got a strong incentive to move to 8 because the migration seems easier.
I think what you're going to find are very heterogeneous environments. I think you're going to find people that are going to say, I have a desktop user. They don't move around. They don't roam. They're, you know, supporting a product. They're punching in orders. They're doing this. Windows 7 makes great sense, and we're going to use Windows 7 for these folks.
Sure.
For folks saying, hey, this person's out in the field. They roam around. They want better broadband connection. We're going to be leveraging direct access. They want that tablet form factor. They need a touch device. We're going to put them on 8, but we're going to see heterogeneous environment. And unlike where we said, look, this product ends, now it's time to move to this one, we're saying you're going to have 7 and 8 machines that you're going to have in your environment. Mm-hmm. If you're using Server 2008 R2, you're going to be able to manage them beautifully. If you decide to move to Server 8, you're going to be able to manage them beautifully and add some new feature functionality, to your Windows 8 devices.
It does sound like a heterogeneous environment on the server side, too. That
absolutely.
To get that better version of Direct Access, I'm going to stand up a few 8 servers,
yep.
But I really don't have any reason to do anything to my 2008 R2 servers.
No, absolutely. And I think when you bring in something like the FCCM 2012, which now gives us a way to manage Android and the iOS devices, mm-hmm. where I can set up pin codes, where I can wipe those devices. As we start to look at ARM, you know, that we can use FCCM to manage ARM devices and other types of devices. We have a lot of options that are really going to be open for people, and I think you're going to see different types of hardware within your infrastructure, so you're going to have different ways to manage them. But the great thing is you can pick one way to do them all, or you can mix and match depending on where you're at and what you want to do. There's going to be a lot of options, which is great, but I think it's also a little daunting for some IT pros, so it's going to take some time to sit down and really go, where it not only is the company today, but sort of leveraging this flexible work style and how people want to work, where are we going over the next 3 years? Are we going to allow people to bring in their own devices? Are we going to, you know, institute new policies to secure and lock down these? Are we going to allow third-party tablets into our infrastructure? And how will we manage those? Will we do a remote desktop? How are we going to secure those? And these are the types of questions which this is a great point in time for an IT pro to kind of stop and take a step back and go, where are we? Where do we want to be? And what is going to be the best mix of these different tools to get me and to allow my company to be agile?
Well, you bring up this killer point of it's not just that I have tablets in my enterprise that I don't manage. It's my flipping CTO brought them in.
Yep.
You know, this would be all well and fine if it was rank and file, but it's my boss's boss that says, mm-hmm. I'll be using this iPad in the office now. Figure out how to make it work.
Yeah.
And I can't secure it.
Yep.
The argument you can't use that is not acceptable. At least now give me an alternative. You can use this instead.
And I think we're going to find, you know, iPads and Android devices and Windows 8 devices working together. I think, you know, there definitely is domain join and aspects like that, that we're better able to secure a Windows device than we ever can a third party. But we understand that we're creating ways for users to bring those other devices in and do it because we know that's what's making them productive. And we don't want to say no to someone who's being productive on a device.
But I'm going to have to put limit. I mean, if I've got both those species of devices, I can put limits on what an iOS device can do versus what a Win8 device can do. Win8's going to be able to go deeper to the domain, better authentication. Really, if I want to do anything like that on an iPad, I have to do everything virtual.
Yeah. It's the same. It's sort of like a Windows phone and an iPhone.
Yeah.
I love the fact with my Windows phone, if I get a DRM'd email, I can open it up. I can connect to my internal SharePoint site.
Right.
I can view a PowerPoint natively. I can view an Excel spreadsheet natively. I can do these things. And Mango was such a game changer for Windows phone that it went from a device that I like to a device that I can't live without.
Right.
And I think we're going to find that. Hey, you know, that 7 and 8 with, hey, this is a device that's absolutely perfect for what I do, and this is a device that I can't live without because it's allowing me to do things I couldn't do before. So I think we're going to find that mixture as well.
Well, and I appreciate that you guys are thinking in terms of mixture because generally I had to go to third parties if I wanted to make mixtures work.
Yeah. I don't think we really have a choice. I think that this is where business is going, and as part of our flexible work style, it is. We can't say no to people who say, I can be more productive if you let me do this. We don't want to say, no, you have to do it this way. So I think we want to do that. But I think Windows 8 is going to create a better, smarter way for people to go, hey, not only can I do this, but I can do it securely and I can do more on this Windows device than I can do on the other devices. I have access to more, need to jump through less hoops. And if the device has that battery life, the form factor, the feature functionality they're looking for, but that they can know any piece of software I own or need can be loaded onto this, and I don't need to buy different versions moving across multiple platforms, that's going to become a big game changer. And that's what I'm very excited about when we get to that point, and IT and end users are going to be able to have that discussion. And I think the consumer preview is the first step in showing how serious we are towards that.
And that's a big set of goals there, Stephen. You know, you've got to deliver on a lot if you're going to pull that off.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the great thing is that for those people that are playing with the consumer preview, we've got a ton of content up on the Springboard series. And we just went through a redesign. So we've redesigned the whole look and feel of it. We've organized the content. So it tells more of a story on where do I start and how do I go and how do I move through this. And for Windows 8, we have quite a bit of content for the consumer preview. And as we move towards RC, we'll continue to add even more around how to start piloting and deploying that when we get to that RC time frame. But right now we've got hundreds and hundreds of pieces of content that go deep dive into all of the key features that any IT pro can go out, check out, and take a look at. And also through Springboard, they can have direct access to the ISO download rather than using some people have chosen not to use the Windows installer. Yeah. The Windows installer, I think, is great because it streams the bits down to you. It allows you to create backup media. It's much faster than downloading a full ISO. But the one limitation is you can only build a DVD or ISO for the bit of the machine that you're on. So if you're on 64, you can't get 32 bits. I want to remind people, if they go to Springboard, there's a direct link to download the 32 and 64-bit ISO so you can use that for testing across your organization.
Awesome. Looks like we've got lots to play with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stephen, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Always a pleasure. And if any of your folks are planning on attending MMS, we'll be there, and we will plan to have quite a big splash at TechEd as well. So we're looking forward to meeting folks, and come on up and say hi anytime.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.